pleasure to be here tonight again for the ministry of the Lord. First of all, to Genesis, please. Genesis chapter number 3. Genesis 3, verse 16. And to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. 1 Corinthians, please, and chapter number 11. 1 Corinthians, chapter 11. Verse 8. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this cause ought the woman to have power on her head, because of the angels. Nevertheless, neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. For as the woman is of the man, even so is the man also by the woman, but all things of God. Galatians now, please, and in chapter number 3. Galatians and chapter number 3. Verse 28. Galatians 3:28. There is neither Jew nor Greek, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither male nor female, for ye are all one in Christ Jesus. And then finally, 1 Peter chapter number 3. 1 Peter and chapter number 3. Even in verse number 1. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word come by the conversation of the wives, while they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair and of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also, who trusted in God, adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. And the Lord will bless his word to us, trust. This evening. And we'll see from the verses that we've read tonight that I'm, what is the expression, treading where angels fear to tread. If you want to have a kind of sensational, kind of grab people's attention, my subject tonight is women's liberation, or female emancipation. Now, Lucy in the car asked me earlier what I was speaking on tonight, and I said, women's liberation, and she said, oh, inspirational. She says, what does liberation mean? I said, if you come along tonight and listen, we'll maybe see. But maybe a bit more technically and a bit less sensationally, what we want to do tonight is to reconcile Galatians 3, which tells us that there is perfect equality between the male and the female. And we want to reconcile that with verses that we have read in 1 Peter and in 1 Corinthians 11 and in 1 Corinthians 14, if we had taken the time, and in Ephesians 5 and in the Colossian epistle and in Titus as well, where we learn that women are to submit and women are to be in subjection and women are to have their heads covered and women are to be in silence and women are not to teach. And so on. But that's what we want to do tonight, is we just want to reconcile these two New Testament teachings of the equality of the male and female, and verses that we read where there is a difference, there is an inequality, and we'll see what that is and why it is tonight. Gender equality is the expression nowadays. I think women's liberation is the old-fashioned way of looking at it. Nowadays, the big subject is gender equality. Believe it or not, in spite of all the troubles and problems that we have with our economy and all sorts of other things, it is one of Holyrood's principal policy areas, one of Nicola Sturgeon's key areas as First Minister of the country, is to bring about gender equality. And you would think, wouldn't you, that given the passage of time and the progressive nature of the society that we live in, that there wouldn't be any such thing as gender inequality nowadays. Now, the United Nations decided to look into this recently, and they concluded that gender equality is essential for the achievement of human rights for all, yet discriminatory laws against women persist in every corner of the globe, and new discriminatory laws are regularly enacted. In all legal traditions, many laws continue to institutionalise second-class status for women and girls with regard to nationality, citizenship, health, education, marital rights, employment rights, parental rights, inheritance and property rights. These forms of discrimination against women are incompatible with women's empowerment. So it doesn't look as if there has been very much progress. It is still an issue as far as society is concerned. They went on to say, discrimination transcends national, cultural and religious boundaries and is often fueled by patriarchal stereotyping and power imbalances which are mirrored in laws, policies and practice. So to set the scene in society, the United Nations, looking across the globe, in every country, in every continent, in every legal jurisdiction, came to the conclusion that everywhere there is discrimination between women or against women, that there is an imbalance between male and female. I'm going to say this, for biological differences there are, resulting in hierarchical relationships between men and women in the distribution of power and rights, favouring men and disadvantaging women. Now, you might know that that's true, and you might accept that that's not an acceptable thing, and that's something that should be being addressed and balanced. It's something that women have always struggled against. Something that down through the ages, women have always resisted, this imbalance between male and female. And the United Nations have decided that it's cultural, that it's social, that it's a construct made by dominant males who have subjugated women, and no doubt across the world there are women who suffer terribly as a result of that imbalance. In the political sphere, I was thinking about this during the week, I was interested to note a comment by Maria Eagle. I hadn't heard of her either. Apparently she's a shadow defence secretary. And Ken Livingstone was appointed alongside her to chair a committee. And this is what she said. She is fuming that as the first female Shadow Defence Secretary, a man has now been appointed to look after her. And so in all the affairs of state, one of the issues that immediately grates and immediately causes a problem, and it's one of the issues that Maria Eagle saw in the appointment of Ken Livingstone, and I'm sure there are others, was the fact that he was a man and she was a woman. It's true in an economic sense as well. BBC again this week, I noticed the World Economic Forum says that the gender pay gap is going to be closed You just have to wait another 118 years. There is a difference in pay between men and women. You remember, I think there was a movie made about it, the Dagenham, the Ford sewing machinist strike of 1968, leading to the Equal Pay Act of 1970. And what's happened? The gap between male and female pay in the United Kingdom is still 19%. And of the top 250 listed companies in the United Kingdom, only 10 have women chief executives. It's social as well. There's the pro-abortion lobby. There's the militant protest feminine movement, whose motto actually is, "Our God is a woman." Cultural as well. There's the differences in sports prize money. It's only in 2007 that the winner of Wimbledon, the male and the female, won the same amount of money. And all of that pressure, that imbalance, and that female resistance against it is right throughout all of society. And it has even infiltrated into religious circles. You know that the ordination in Christendom of women priests and bishops. In Judaism, apparently, there are female rabbis, and even in Islam, these kind of things are happening. And so too, that kind of political correctness and that kind of agenda and the pressures resulting from that in society also bear down on assemblies. And over the years, it has made some inroads into assembly practice. That pressure for female equality. And there is this tension then between that equality agenda, which we're told every rational and reasonable person ought to support, is set against assembly practice and New Testament teaching, which, as I said, covers head covering, silence, leadership, teaching, that would make it appear that the New Testament teaching is arcane, is behind the times, has lost pace and is out of step with progressive thinking. And young folk, I'm sure, as they sit in modern studies classes and are at university, have to answer. And the friends are brought along to the assembly, "Why are you covering your head? Why are you not allowed to speak? Why are there no female ministers or teachers?" And so that's what we want to look at this evening. Now, the battleground for all of that, as I won't bore you with the details, but the United Nations concluded that the key area for this struggle, as they see it, is the family. It's the family. They say that women's rights are particularly at risk in the family, which is a locus for the perpetuation of traditional patriarchal values. In some countries, women, unlike men, cannot dress as they like, work at night, and so on. And they say that if anything is going to change in society, it's going to first have to change in the home. And yet we've read tonight, haven't we, about what the New Testament teaches about women's place in the home and in marriage. And what we discover is that this power struggle between male and female is most keen, dare I say it, in the family, between husband and wife. And if you're married, particularly, there usually comes a point where there's a truce. But you remember when you were married at first, the struggle between husband and wife. Some of the folk in the room here know a couple, and they shall remain nameless. And the battleground that they chose was soap. One of them liked liquid soap, the other one liked a solid bar of soap. And every time they went into the toilet, the one who wanted the liquid soap put the liquid soap up. And every time the one who liked the bar of soap changed it for a bar of soap. And there was this struggle between husband and wife. And so there is this pressure within marriages. And marriages are under pressure from without as well to conform. You know, nowadays nobody speaks about their husband or their wife, it's their partner. And so on. And so there is pressures. So to set the scene, there is an imbalance, the UN confirmed, across the world between male and female, wherever you look. And women are constantly struggling against and resisting that imbalance. And nowhere is that tension more evident than in the family between husband and wife. Well, we've read tonight, and what we've read in Genesis tells us that that ought to be perfectly, we ought to be perfectly aware of that. And that all it actually does, that imbalance between male and female, confirms that the Bible is true and is relevant. Because when we come into Genesis 3, we learn there the source of this imbalance and the tension that exists as a result of that imbalance. Unto the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow shalt thou bring forth children, and thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Now the woman wasn't cursed, but there was retribution imposed by God as a result of the fall. And that retribution related to her relationship with Adam. There was going to be a change necessitated and brought about as a result of her sin and disobedience. And these are the conditions that were imposed as a result of the fall. I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. Now the commentators and myself, I'm not sure exactly what this means, other than, I don't know what the difference is, but that women would, probably means would have multiple births, either than maybe just one, or have many children through childbirth at the same time. But there would be many that would be born, and like in sorrow shalt thou bring forth children. And so the pain and travail of childbirth that would come upon the woman, that would be unique to the woman amongst creatures that give birth, the travail and you know, for a man to actually talk about this, it's having never been there, having never done it, having never experienced it. That was one of the retributions brought as a result, but it was more than that. And thy desire shall be to thy husband. Now what does that mean? The same expression is in Genesis 4. It simply means this, that her will would be subject to the overruling will of the man. She would need his permission. She would need his permission. That's what it means. That her desire shall be to thy husband. Her will would always be subject to his overruling will. And he shall rule over thee. He had the prerogative to grant or deny. He had the final say. Now, I can feel the haggles already. She would need his permission, and he had the final say. Now, these are my rules for my home. That's what the retribution was. So that situation has resulted, as a result of the fall, in restlessness in that relationship, in tension, in rejection of that, naturally and carnally, and resistance from women against those conditions that were imposed. And there you have what we see all across the world, in every continent, in every society, in every legal jurisdiction. You have this situation where the male is lord and the female is subject, and she needs his permission, and he has the final say. And females resisting that. Barnes says, for from being the help perfectly suited for each other and the partner of his affections, her condition henceforth would be that of humble, enforced subjection. Now that's only half the problem, of course. Because the man is given responsibility to be lord over her, and he is incapable of righteously and justly administering that responsibility. That is where the tension and the abuse and all of it comes from. So that is the source of it. That's the framework then that the world lives in. And the world lives under these fall conditions. And women resist. So what's the solution to that? Is the solution then to fight against that? To resist, to be progressive, that the assembly ought to then change to conform to these kind of things. What is the solution to it? Well, the solution we read about in 1 Corinthians 11. And the solution is this, is that female emancipation, women's liberation, is found in the gospel. It's found in the gospel. It has been achieved already by the work of Christ. Now, when you come to 1 Corinthians 11, we come to the section that is right in the middle of headship. Right in the middle of that section that is dealing with what on the face of it is perhaps the most visible symbol that is taken as being subversive, that is a suppression of women, that is discriminatory against women, the symbol of head covering. But right in the middle of that section, we read those verses 8 to 12. Let's just look at them and see where the solution to this problem of discrimination lies. Verse number 8. For the man is not of the woman, but the woman of the man. So the apostle is going back to creation. He is going back to God's original intended order. Order. This is not rank, but it is God's order. And that order of the male first and the female second, God established in creation. Now verse number 9 then tells us that God had a purpose in that order. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. So that is the purpose in the order that God provided. And the purpose was that the woman would help the man serve and glorify God together. God's original purpose in creation. Now in that, there is no thought of rank or relative value or worth in the original order. God's plan was for his glory and for mankind's optimum benefit. And then the fall intervened. And man fell, and the retribution that we read about in Genesis 3 was imposed. And so now men and women are living in different conditions, not those that were originally intended by God. But then verse number 11. Nevertheless. So here now is a change, speaking about something different. Nevertheless. Neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man in the Lord. In the Lord. So he's not now talking about the original order of creation. He's now talking about conditions and status that pertains in the new creation. In the new creation. In the Lord. And what is he saying? Neither is the man without the woman, neither the woman without the man. There is equality. There is equality been established in the Lord, by the gospel, through the gospel, accomplished by the Lord on the cross in his work. One of the effects of that work is equality between men and women, for those who are in the Lord. Female equality and female liberation and emancipation is only found in the gospel, listen, and is already accomplished. It's already accomplished. That battle has been fought and won. Women's status has been changed. Barnes says, only a spiritual resurrection will restore her to her true place as the help meet for the man. And that has been done in the gospel. And verse number 12 tells us that this was always God's purpose. For as the woman is of the man, that woman came out of the man, even so is the man also by the woman. In other words, every other man that has been born right throughout time has come from a woman. God's order is revealed in his method of creation, but his purpose in equality, verse number 11, has been revealed, foreshadowed in his method of procreation. It was always God's purpose. But come back to verse number 10, this very difficult verse. For this cause, the woman ought to have authority on her head. For what cause? For what cause? Well, I think he's referring to verses 8 and 9. For conformity to God's original order, and also conformity to God's subsequent ordination, that is, fall conditions, as we see in Genesis 3. Carnal woman rejects, resists, and struggles against God's order, and more so God's ordained retribution and order as a result of the fall. So for this cause, the restoration of God's original order, and for conformity to current conditions that God has ordained. You see, in the current state, none of the other results of the fall have been reversed. Now, you mothers will understand that the moment you get saved, childbirth didn't become any easier. Neither the sorrow that attaches to it. You see, you go back into Genesis 3, that word sorrow is not just about childbirth. The idea is broader than that. It means that having children for a mother will bring much sorrow. And mothers worry and have anxiety. Now, none of that changes as a result of salvation. So the conditions of that we live in the fall have not changed. And men are still subject to the provisions of the fall as well. Genesis 3, 17 and 19. So the gospel has restored women's status, but hasn't reversed the sentence imposed, the conditions that we live in. Well, there's coming a day when they will be. In Acts 3, speaks about, verse 21, the times of restitution of all things. And in Romans 8, 19-23, for the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creature was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope, because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. There is coming a day when all of that will change and will be put right, but we still live as believers in all conditions. And you see, for angels, nothing else evidently in that sense has changed. The conditions of Genesis 3 have not changed. So as they observe, as angels watch to see the difference that salvation has made, as angels observe the equality that has been achieved by the gospel, where do they see that? What is obvious to them? A woman is still subject to her husband. Men are still subject to the conditions of the fall. Angels are looking on. What is the sign to them that women have been liberated and restored to equality in the gospel? It's head covering. Head covering. Say, wait a minute. Head covering surely is a symbol of the opposite. As I said earlier, surely head covering is a subversive symbol of women's subjection. Not so. Quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. The head covering is a symbol of liberation, emancipation, and equality. Because women have been liberated to do what? To submit. To submit. Carnal woman resists. Natural woman resists. Seeks to overturn. Struggles against the conditions imposed by God. But the believing woman, who has been liberated by the gospel, is now free to submit to God's order. And so what angels see as they observe is not women who are resisting and struggling, seeking to overturn, but women who are submissive to God's order and God's purpose for them. And angels see a difference. And angels see that there has been liberation and emancipation because women are obedient and submissive to the word of God. The gospel elevates, liberates, and supplies the grace to serve God according to his creatorial purpose. And more than that, in spite of fall conditions, women are now at liberty to submit to God's order and purpose, confident of equal status in the gospel, without conceding anything of value, worth, and dignity, and have been empowered, words that the UN used, have been empowered by grace to submit, having had their status as equal partners in the Lord. The Lord said, the truth shall set you free, and if the Son shall make you free, you shall be free indeed. And sisters are now free to submit. You see, an unbeliever cannot submit. Romans 8 tells us that. The carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God. Neither can it be. The unbeliever can't submit. And so the perennial struggle, the battle of the sexes, or whatever you call it, goes on in the world. Submission is an essential characteristic of salvation. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. The very basic characteristics of our salvation, submission. And after all, submission is the ultimate purpose of God. The ultimate purpose of God for everybody. Every knee shall bow. 1 Corinthians 15, for he hath put all things under his feet, But when he saith all things are put under him, it is manifest that he is accepted which did put all things under him. And when all things shall be subdued unto him, then shall the Son also himself be subject unto him that put all things under him, that God may be all in all. Subjection is God's ultimate purpose. In our present sense too, the church is subject to Christ, and hath put all things under his feet, and gave him to be head over all things to the church. And women's submission follows exactly the same pattern. Ephesians 5, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. Colossians 3, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Titus 2, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that's the same word, that the word of God be not blasphemed. And in all of these things, the remarkable thing when you read them is, every time God tells us that women are to submit to their husbands, he gives us a reason. He graciously explains himself. None of the reasons are to do with inferiority. None of them. But when we come to 1 Peter 3, the verses that we read just before we close, look at this in just a little bit more detail. Likewise ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word be won by the conversation of the wives, that they behold your chaste conversation coupled with fear. Wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word. Now, most of the commentators agree that that is referring to a believing wife with an unbelieving husband. And this is gospel testimony, that by being so different from the world and in resisting God's order, by submitting in full conditions and all it costs and all the grace that is necessary, is a powerful gospel testimony. But the language could also support the view that it's not just an unbelieving husband of a believing wife, that it's any believing wife, even with a believing husband, who submits herself in this way to the word of God and submits herself to her husband, that is a testimony to anybody who is an unbeliever in this world, in this society that we live in. Powerful gospel testimony. While they behold, so not angels watching now, but unbelievers watching. But then it says, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of the plaiting the hair and the wearing of gold or the putting on of apparel. Now this word adorning is the word cosmos. And it means orderly arrangement. Orderly arrangement. Or hierarchy of priority. That's what he's talking about here. Hierarchy of priority. Orderly arrangement. It doesn't mean a prohibition against these things. We like our prohibitions and our rules. Not actually what it says. Because if it was a prohibition, it would be a prohibition against putting on clothes. Because the word apparel just means a garment of any sort. It's about priority. It's about the woman's priority not being outward and show and the skin deep. A different priority, a higher priority in that. The word cosmos is the word world, whose world let it not be. Now we use that expression, don't we? We'll say something that means the world to her. Well, it says, be women who it can be said of this behaviour And this goal in winning unbelievers for Christ, let that be your world. In submission to, it's the highest priority. What is the highest priority? Let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. So women are observed by angels, are observed by unbelievers, and are observed by God in this matter. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves, being in subjection unto their own husbands, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as ye do well, and are not afraid with any amazement. Now that last expression means not afraid of fear. You know what he's saying there? He's saying when women do this, they're taking a big risk. When a wife submits herself to her husband, she's taking a big risk. Delegating, handing over responsibility to her husband. That's a big risk. That's why he then goes on to say in the very next verse, likewise ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honour unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, as being heirs together. Heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. The responsibility lies on the husband now. What a weighty responsibility to bear and to discharge. So in that context, it's inevitable then that the assembly is out of step with the world. The world is rejecting God's order. The assembly is submitting to it. In head cover, in the silence of sisters, in the role of sisters, in Christian wives submitting to their husband, in obeying the word, in taking that risk. But in so doing, conceding nothing of the value and worth that has been granted and achieved by the Lord Jesus through the gospel, joint heirs. May God bless his word.